It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up in just a few minutes, it's this week's edition of Food Friday with a focus on picnics. You can get us started right now. What is your favorite thing, food, to bring to a picnic? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. First, the Republicans running for governor in 2022 have spent a lot of time talking about the election of 2020. It's especially true for Tim Ramthan, the state representative who made a name for himself by calling on lawmakers to revoke President Joe Biden's victory. WPR's Sean Johnson reports.
Less than a month before the Republican primary for governor, several poster boards are displayed on either side of a lectern in the Wisconsin Assembly's ornate parlor. They're there for the press conference called by Tim Ramthan, the Republican candidate for governor. One is a map showing which county Republican parties have called for a full forensic, physical, and cyber audit of the 2020 election. Another is a bulleted list describing Wisconsin's electronic voter database. At the bottom are several post-it notes with handwritten numbers. Ramthan, a Republican state representative from Campbellsport, is talking about the state Supreme Court's recent ruling that held absentee ballot drop boxes are illegal in Wisconsin. He mischaracterizes the ruling and goes well beyond what the court actually said.
When the ballot drop boxes were used illegally, anything and all things that went into them made them null and void the moment they went into the box. So
what Ramthan is advocating would be an extreme step for Wisconsin and American democracy. He wants the Wisconsin legislature to vote to decertify President Joe Biden's victory in Wisconsin, a move election law experts, including the legislature's nonpartisan attorneys, say is impossible.
My focus has been since day one, transparency and truth. I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I am not. How can you ignore this when you're supposed to be serving the public and not try to do something about it? That's what I've embraced. I'm a servant of the people.
When Ramthan speaks, some of his supporters in the crowd literally answer, amen. Ramthan backer Sana Hipschman of Chilton says he works for people like her.
And that's why I will do whatever I can to help him. I know he's not given a lot of money. I know he has to work against his own party for me. And if someone's going to do that for me, then I'm going to be there for them.
Ramthan has a passionate following among Republicans for whom election denial is their number one issue. He's been endorsed by former National Security Advisor Michael Flynn and Mike Lindell, the MyPillow guy.
And I will tell you, I'll just put it right out there, I'm endorsing he will be the best governor your country or your state ever had in history.
The most prominent Republican calling for the 2020 election to be overturned, former President Donald Trump, also said nice things about Ramthan. But he stopped short of a formal endorsement, giving the nod to construction executive Tim Michaels instead. And while Ramthan's supporters are vocal, they appear to be a relatively small group. A recent survey of GOP voters by Marquette University found just 3% favored Ramthan. Most voters said they preferred Michaels or former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish. But UCLA professor Rick Hassan, an election law expert, says it would be a mistake to assume that Ramthan's message is harmless.
And just having this discussion in a gubernatorial race, as you have in Wisconsin, I think elevates the claims.
Hassan says what Ramthan's asking for, decertification, has no basis in the law. Biden's victory in Wisconsin was affirmed by a statewide canvass, a partial recount, and multiple state and federal court decisions. Optimistically, Hassan says, the push to overturn the 2020 election is just cheap talk, a way to placate the base and Trump.
Less optimistically, I think that there's a movement to try to not only make voting harder, which is something that we've seen in the last few decades on the Republican side, but also to potentially provide a pathway to overturning election results.
There's a chance Ramthan's presence in the GOP primary, or at least his message, has affected the race. Neither Clayfish nor Michaels will commit to certifying the 2024 presidential election if they're elected governor. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
You can read more profiles of the candidates for governor at WPR.org. Now With great weather in Wisconsin, what better way to eat a meal than outside in nature, or at least on the lawn? It's Food Friday. This week, we're talking all about picnic food, how to pack, what makes good picnic food, and some recipes along the way. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Are you a fan of picnics when the weather's nice, or maybe even not quite as nice? What are your favorite recipes to bring along to serve up when you're eating at the park, in the backyard, wherever you have your picnics? In fact, what is your favorite picnic spot? Call it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Ashley Lecker runs the Wisconsin food blog Cheese Curd in Paradise. She's the author of the Serial Killer Cookbook. Ashley, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Are you a fan of picnics yourself? I know you're a fan of food. Do you like to eat it outside?
Yeah, I have two little kids. So picnicking, eating outside is a part of the, you know, kind of part of the summer package with them. And so it's something that we enjoy, and it's a great way to make things at home that you bring, or even bring some, or, you know, stop somewhere and just enjoy eating the meal outside, enjoying the nice weather while we have it.
And you've got some fun recipes for us that we'll get into that kind of up our picnic game. But in general, are there like, when you're thinking, okay, I'm making food to serve, you know, on a tarp outside as opposed to on the kitchen table, where does your mind start to go?
Yes, I definitely think differently, because I try to think of things that can eat with my hands, or things that are easy and portable that I don't necessarily have to assemble at the place that we're eating, that I can do the work in advance, so that we, when we get there, we can, you know, spread out our blanket and we can enjoy the food.
Now, one of my oversights, I think, when I do an outdoor thing is the beverage. And that's where you start us off. You know, I think, oh, we'll bring water, you know, maybe cans of soda, real creative. No, you've got watermelon, lime, agua fresca. Tell us what goes into making this.
Yes, this is one of my favorite things to make in the summer. It is really, really easy. And I like to make mine with watermelon, because that's one of my favorite summer fruits. And with agua fresca, really what it is it's water with some kind of sweet, like a melon, like a, and then a little bit of sugar and typically lime. And you blend it, and then it's simply just strained. And you can put it in a container, serve it chilled, serve on ice. If you are having a little more of a fun type of picnic, you could put a little alcohol in there. And it's really delicious and really refreshing.
I've got that recipe up at wpr.org/foodfriday. You mentioned watermelon's your favorite variation. What are some other ones that you like?
Oh, I love, also love to use like cantaloupe, or even like a honeydew melon. The one thing about those, you know, or watermelon too, in that case, make sure it's really nice and ripe, because you're going to get the best, you know, the sweet flavor, and more, the riper the fruit, you have more of that juice and liquid that will go into your drink.
And what do you do to transport that? Just a good big, I guess, jug that isn't going to spill in the cooler on the way over.
Yeah, something that seals well, because it is juice, and so it gets sticky and kind of if it spills, you don't want that. So something with a good seal on it that you can bring. They have those kind of cooler jugs that have the spout on them that you can just pour right from those, and those are great to use as well for transporting.
Now, I'm a big fan of a pasta salad, a potato salad, that kind of thing in a picnic. I don't mind, you know, having, you know, plates and silverware. It doesn't have to all be finger food. You've given us a pesto caprese pasta. So the steaks, obviously, you're not going to cook it on site. You do it in advance. It's a cold pasta salad, though, perfect for a picnic. Tell us about this dish a little bit.
This is one of my favorite pasta salads. I love pesto, and pesto just screams summer to me, right? When we have all that fresh basil, and then we have all of that, and then just the, you know, seasonal tomatoes, mozzarella, and it's one of my very, very, very favorites. So with this one, it's really quite simple. It's I use a shaped pasta just because I think it catches the sauce really nicely with inside the pasta, and it's fresh tomatoes and fresh mozzarella, pesto, and a little bit of mayo. And so it's a creamy. Now, if you are not a person who likes mayonnaise so much and don't prefer a creamy sauce to your pasta salad, you could leave that out and just add a little bit more pesto, and that would, it would still work beautifully.
And pesto, we were talking about this on the show a couple weeks back. You know, your basic pesto recipes like basil and pine nuts and the garlic and olive oil and so on, you can do a lot of variations on it, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I have had pesto that's made with like the tops of carrot, of like carrot tops even, or some people will put, use cashews or almond as their, the kind of nut base instead of the pine nuts. So you can really play with it and use whatever kind of flavors that work best for you. I love basil, so it's hard for me to stray away from that, but there's a lot of different variations. You could even use garlic scapes if you would like to, which is that top, that green kind of top part of the plant that grows out of the garlic heads. And that also works.
We're talking to Wisconsin food blogger Ashley Lecker, creator of the site Cheese Curd in Paradise. She's with us today for Food Friday for Summer Picnics 101, breaking down what makes good picnic food, sharing some recipes she loves. You can find that pasta salad, that pesto pasta salad we were just talking about, that agua fresca and more at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can join in now at 800-642-1234. Have you always been a fan of picnics, of eating outside? Have you done it more maybe during the pandemic? It turned into a go-to get-together with friends or family. What is your favorite kind of picnic site? The yard, a park, you name it. And, of course, what kind of foods have to be at your picnic? Call in with your thoughts, your favorites, your questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our Food Friday talk with Ashley Lecker from the Wisconsin food blog, Cheese Curd in Paradise. She's with us today to give us tips for our next summer picnic. We've got some recipes from Ashley at WPR.org/Food Friday. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your picnic favorites, maybe your advice for others, a picnic fail, or a question for our guest. 800-642-1234 is the number. That's 800-642-1234. Ashley, you mentioned earlier picnicking with your kids. Do you have thoughts? What are some of the big success stories for kid food at a picnic?
Oh, I think the biggest success for kids at the picnic is as long as you have a nice treat to have at the end. I know mine love dessert, and so they are always very curious what the treat is going to be at the end of our meal.
And what is it? What's the treat at the end?
So my favorite, one of my favorite things to bring is that these are really easy. I have a recipe for brownie muffins, and they are, instead of having, you know, big pan of muffins, which works great, of brownies, I mean, which works fine. But these are individual ones. So you can put them in a sealable bag, you can transport them, and it makes things quite easy. And so it's just a very traditional brownie recipe that I make in muffin tins. I also add some mini chocolate chips because I love to have a few chocolate chips inside of my brownies.
You can join in this Food Friday conversation at 800-642-1234 as we talk about picnics. Now, we've got a caller here at 800-642-1234. Bev is with us in Pewaukee. Bev, hi.
Hi.
Go ahead,
Bev. One of my favorite things to take for just a little side is stringless sweet pea pods.
Oh, great. That's easy to transport, nice and crunchy. Bev, thanks a lot for that. Yeah, something as simple as, chopped up veggies, raw veggies, can be a great picnic side dish. What do you think, Ashley?
I think that is fantastic. And my kiddos are also, and me, are also a big fan of those as well.
Thanks a lot for that call, Bev, at 800-642-1234. Okay, let's get a little more ambitious now. You shared a main dish. It sounds ambitious to me. Shrimp ceviche. Now, I've had that in restaurants where they know what they're doing. This is with pickled onion. Tell us a little bit about this. Is it easier than I think to make?
It is. It is one of those dishes that don't be intimidated by it because it is very easy to put together. Ceviche is a preparation style that essentially cooks your fish or seafood in acidic citrus. And the acidic citrus cures the protein and it cooks it. So if you use something like shrimp, which is kind of that gray color when it starts, you will watch it become pink as the citrus gets its way into the shrimp. So one of my favorite ways is to use shrimp and also pickled onions and then some tomatoes, avocado, fresh cilantro, and lime juice and a little bit of jalapeno. And it travels really well. You can put it on ice and then serve it with some tortilla chips while you're picnicking outside. And it's delicious and it's perfect if it's hot outside as well.
We're talking to Ashley Lecker, creator of the Wisconsin food blog Cheese Curd in Paradise, getting some Food Friday advice on picnics. Let's bring on another caller now at 800-642-1234. Chris is with us in La Crosse. Chris, hello.
Yeah, hi. I was commenting with the screener there that I lived in Germany for a while in the Frankfurt area, and whenever you ate anything that tasted good, the word you used was Lecker. So I found it kind of fun and ironic that you're making all these wonderful things and your last name in German was yummy.
Look, Chris, I dimly remember that from my German classes X number of years ago. Ashley, I'm guessing you probably knew this already.
I did. My husband is sometimes on the route for like different signs like in German that say that on it, but I did know that, and I enjoy the irony of it as well.
Chris, thanks a lot for sharing that with us. Now, getting back to a little ambition here in our prep, you've got a homemade bread you like to make and then bring along for picnics, for maybe sandwiches or a cheese board or something like this, a four-ingredient, no-knead, crusty bread. That does sound good for a picnic. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, this is a bread where it's all-purpose flour, salt, active dry yeast, and warm water. And it bakes in a Dutch oven. And it is one of the simplest recipes that I make. And what comes out is this beautiful, crusty, round loaf of bread that's perfect for sandwiches, or if you're doing a charcuterie or just some meat and cheese or spreads of some kind, of maybe just some bread and butter. Like, that's, who doesn't love that? And so it's fantastic to bring on a picnic.
Now, bread, great for sandwiches, of course. The Central Time team getting hungry, hearing you talk about these recipes. Dean Canetta, our executive producer, says he likes at picnics fancy Italian sandwiches, maybe on a baguette that doesn't get too soggy. And then we heard on Facebook from Jacqueline, who says chipped ham sammies and potato salad. Do you have thoughts on sandwiches for a picnic? Now, I've done this with homemade sandwiches or store-bought sandwiches, and, you know, half hour in, they're a little on the soggy side. You could still eat them, but it's not, you know, primo sandwich experience. Any thoughts on non-soggy sandwichification at our picnics?
Yeah, the sandwiches are fantastic for picnics. And what I like to do with my sandwiches, if we are bringing them on a picnic, is I like to add like any condiments, like whether that be an oil and vinegar or mayo, mustard. I like to add it right before we eat. And sometimes I'll even keep the tomatoes separate and I'll add those right before we eat as well, because that can help keep your sandwich not as soggy, just because those ingredients have a little more moisture in them and it can get into your bread. And if it sits a little bit, then you have some soggy bread. But keeping those separate and just kind of getting them all prepped in advance, but putting them on right before you eat will keep your bread not soggy and nice and crisp.
Excellent. Now, Lauren Cox, one of our producers, mentions his friend made an incredible corn dip that we brought to a brewer's tailgate this week, more of a parking lot picnic than a traditional one. I think tailgates counts as a picnic. That's fine, Lauren. Dips are a big feature, I think, maybe for those cold vegetables or for chips or whatever. Do you have any favorite picnic dips?
Yes, I really love just a fresh salsa, or I love beer dip with pretzels. Those are some of my favorites as well. And I think the corn dip that I have had someone make that at a potluck I went to once, if it's the creamy corn dip I'm thinking of, and it was delicious.
Excellent. Now, do you, like, are you hardcore enough in a picnic where you have, like, special gear and, like, all sorts of coolers and things like that? Or do you get by with just some of the basics? What are your favorite things to have to make that picnic logistically simpler?
I do not have anything too technical. We have a cooler that's on wheels and a blanket and like a drink cooler type of thing. And that's kind of what we do. I think what's also important, make sure bring paper towels with you, cut your stuff in advance, use sealable bags. Those are all things that will make your life much easier on the picnic, because it is kind of hard to like cut bread, meat or cheese on a cutting board on like a picnic blanket. So cutting some of that stuff in advance will save you time once you get there.
Okay, now here's a weird crossover with your other specialty here. You wrote a cookbook made up of serial killers' last meal requests. You want to talk about one of the recipes today. It's a classic picnic food for a lot of people. Classic picnic food, fried chicken. But it was John Wayne Gacy's last meal. Tell us about this fried chicken, please.
So, yes, I wrote this book. It came out in 2020, and it was a lot of fun to write. But one of the last meals I talk about is John Wayne Gacy. And his last meal consisted of fried chicken. He owned a couple KFCs, and he had a dozen deep fried shrimp, KFC, French fries, a pound of strawberries, and a bottle of Diet Coke was his last meal. So I have a recipe for a crispy fried chicken in the book. And fried chicken is like the quintessential picnic food, right? That's, Erin thinks of that. And so I have my version of fried chicken. And it's pretty simple. It has, like, you know, the basic ingredients of flour, use cornstarch to get that really crisp chicken. But my secret to really crispy chicken is to actually use vodka in one of the parts of it. They just that it boils a little bit more bubbly, and so it gives you a crispier crust on your chicken.
I love cold leftover fried chicken. Does it actually stay crispy when, you know, it's been in the fridge overnight?
It does. It's not, like, you know, not fresh out of the fryer, crispy, right? But yeah, it's still, but you don't know, but it's not soggy. It doesn't have that, like, you know, when stuff gets really, like, oily or, you know, laden or soggy, it still has a nice texture to it.
Yeah, I'll still eat it the soggy way, but it's better if it stays kind of crispy. Ashley, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That's Ashley Lecker, food blogger behind the site Cheese Curd in Paradise. She joined us for our Food Friday conversation today about summer picnics. We've got recipes from Ashley online at WPR.org/Food Friday. And you can still share your picnic favorites. Maybe you've got one tonight on this lovely day in most of the state, or over the weekend, you could take a picture of your picnic layout and then share it with us at WPR.org/Food Friday. You can go on the Ideas Network Facebook page. It'll probably be easier, actually, the Ideas Network Facebook page, or email ideas@WPR.org. Love to see your picnic in progress. Coming on Monday on the morning show, follow the money in Wisconsin's primary elections. A lot of cash is flowing into campaigns that's likely to increase in the general election. Find out who's putting money into the races for governor and U.S. Senate and the other lower ballot races as well. That's coming up Monday morning at 7 here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Barrett. Coming up today at 6 on 1A Plus, it's the Friday News Roundup. Interest rates go up again. Fed Chair Jay Powell says we might be ready for another bump in the fall. Also, Senator Joe Manchin supports a new energy and health care bill, and revelations from the January 6th committee keep on coming. Today at 6 on 1A Plus. Now, the statewide races in Wisconsin's August 9th primary election have had a flurry of updates in recent days. The Democratic Senate primary looks all but settled after three of the top candidates dropped out, and the Republican primary for governor has seen some major endorsements and spending in the lead up to next month's vote. We're catching up on all the latest developments in the top races on the ballot, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of what has happened in the primary races in the Democratic race for Senate? Were you surprised that over basically the last week, Odlewski, Nelson, the number 2 through 4 candidates dropped out of the race? And how about the GOP primary for governor? The big endorsements from former President Trump, former Vice President Pence, not the same endorsees. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Anthony Chergosky is an assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse. His specialties include American and Wisconsin political campaigns and elections, political communication, and mass media. Anthony, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me again, Rob.
Let's start with the Senate. You've got Democrats seeking to challenge incumbent Republican Ron Johnson in that race. Polling, we had 4 candidates showing up in the polls to varying degrees. Now 3 of them are out. What happened?
It was quite a week, Rob. As you said, flurry of activity is the right way to put it. You had Tom Nelson drop out earlier this week for practical reasons. He had simply put run out of money. And it takes a little bit of money to run a statewide campaign for United States Senate. So he dropped out of the race. But But the pivotal aspect of that was his endorsement of Mandela Barnes. In many ways, that was the first domino to fall. The second domino was Alex Lazary, who, it seems, had to make some tough decisions going into this week of campaigning and the final stretch of campaigning. He was apparently presented with a scenario where he would have to go negative on Mandela Barnes if he were to make up ground in this primary election campaign. I suspect Alex Lazary is looking toward his political future, and it may not have earned him goodwill within the Democratic Party if he had gone negative and gone on the attack against Mandela Barnes. He opted to drop out instead. And that left Sarah Godlewski as the main contender in the race against Mandela Barnes, and there just really wasn't a viable path for her with support coalescing around Mandela Barnes, those key endorsements coming earlier in the week. I had been watching for Godlewski to potentially drop out. That is exactly what she did. And now, as you noted, Rob, we have essentially this race decided with Mandela Barnes being, for all intents and purposes, the assured Democratic nominee going into the November election against Ron Johnson.
Among those four, did you see strong, you know, ideological differences or differences in, you know, the sort of policies they'd focus on?
Not really, Rob. And that was the striking element of this campaign. There was not a lot of daylight between these four key contenders in terms of their policy views. There was also not any daylight between them in the key issue of reforming the Senate to get rid of the filibuster and get rid of that 60-vote threshold that most legislation in the Senate has to overcome to move forward. All of them were really on the same page on so many key issues. I think that made it difficult for the candidates to stand apart from one another. It's probably a big reason why the campaign remained so positive. There really weren't any negative attacks that went back and forth between the candidates, probably a product of the fact that in many ways they were on the same page on a lot of things.
People might look at that and say that's good for a candidate, that they didn't have a lot of damage, political damage coming out of a campaign. And yet I think there's a school of thought, Anthony, that says you want to get beat up a little bit in the primary. You want to be tested by the time you're against your main opponent in the general election. What do you think?
It's a fascinating question, Rob, and it's one that many political scientists have wondered about. On the one hand, you do want a tested candidate coming out of the primary election, a candidate who you know can handle the rigors of what is sure to be a highly negative and extraordinarily expensive general election campaign in this key election that could very well determine control of the United States Senate. On the other hand, a divided party coming out of a primary election is potentially problematic. So I think Democrats are probably coming out of this whole experience quite happy with what happened. Mandela Barnes had to run a difficult campaign. He had to run a campaign against some really talented and well-funded opponents. And he also avoided the negative attacks that may have been coming his way had Alex Lazary, Sarah Godlewski, or Tom Nelson opted for a different strategic path. I think Democrats are coming out of this quite pleased and quite optimistic about the course that this primary election took.
Talking to Anthony Chergosky, assistant professor of political science at UW-La Crosse, rounding up a lot of news in the run-up to the August 9th primary elections here in Wisconsin. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts on the Democratic primary field narrowing in the race for U.S. Senate to run against Senator Ron Johnson. Now we'll turn to the Republican campaign for governor to challenge Democratic incumbent Tony Evers. What do you think? What do you want to see happen? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. All right, we still have candidates in this race for the Republican nomination for governor. Rebecca Clayfish, a former lieutenant governor, Tim Michaels, a construction executive, Tim Ranthan running well behind them, legislator trying to overturn the 2020 election outcome, presidential election outcome in Wisconsin. Kevin Nicholson dropped out. Nobody else is dropping out there, Anthony.
No, that's right, Rob. And this has been quite a contrast to the Democratic Senate primary election, where you had a very positive campaign, not a lot of attacks going back and forth among the Democratic candidates for Senate. Boy, the intensity has really gone up a notch in the Republican race for governor. We've seen some attacks going back and forth between Rebecca Clayfish and Tim Michaels. Certainly, we've seen this proxy battle in the Republican Party between Donald Trump on the one hand, who has endorsed Tim Michaels, and Mike Pence on the other hand, who has gotten behind the candidacy of Rebecca Clayfish. So you've got fascinating internal struggles within the Republican Party playing out in this campaign. And you also have the attacks really ramping up between Clayfish and Michaels, as Clayfish and her ally, Scott Walker, go on the attack against Tim Michaels over issues like right to work, the gas tax, and other matters that are hot button issues within the Republican Party.
Now, when all is said and done, does it really matter? Are Republicans will probably vote for whoever the nominee is against Doty Evers? Democrats are probably going to vote for whoever the nominee is against Ron Johnson. Do these battles really matter once we get into the general election?
Not really, Rob, because voters, as you noted, are so loyal to their political party nowadays. It might take a bit more healing on the Republican side after a hard-fought primary election for governor. There's really no healing to be done on the Democratic side because the major candidates in Nelson and Lassery and Godlewski have all pledged their full support behind Mandela Barnes. So the unification process on the Democratic side has already taken place and the primary election hasn't even happened yet. On the Republican side, though, there will have to be some unification, some healing, some coming together. At the end of the day, though, you are quite right. The Republican Party will be unified against Tony Evers, just as the Democratic Party will be unified against Ron Johnson. Voters are so loyal to their political party nowadays, and Rob, really motivated by opposition to the other side. And that is the ultimate unifying factor in politics. Republicans may have some hard feelings coming out of this nomination process, but they sure as heck can get unified in opposition to Tony Evers, just as Democrats might have had different preferences about their candidate for the United States Senate, but they can sure as heck get unified around their opposition to Ron Johnson.
We're talking to UW La Crosse political science professor Anthony Chergosky about the latest developments in the August 9th primary races in Wisconsin, looking mostly at governor and U.S. Senate. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. If you consider yourself a supporter of one party or the other, did it matter to you who the Democrats ended up nominating for Senate? Did it matter to you who Republicans end up nominating for governor? Or you just hoping for a strong candidate to beat the candidate on the other side that you don't like? If you consider yourself an independent, well, you're a rare breed these days, it seems like. But what do you think as you watch these primaries? What issues do you want to hear candidates for governor talking about, candidates for Senate talking about? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Anthony Chergosky, political science professor at UW La Crosse, with us today to check in on Wisconsin's statewide primary election races for governor, U.S. Senate, and more. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Phone's pretty quiet here. Maybe people aren't that interested in the primaries. Maybe you are just worried about the general election in November. Not a big deal. The primaries, or do you have strong feelings about what's coming out of the Democratic race for Senate, the Republican race for governor? Do you have questions? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Anthony, we did hear from Larry in Janesville, who's concerned. He's worried that the National Democratic Party might have urged, say, Lassery and Godlewski to drop out of the race. Do you think that the National Democrats would have an interest in doing that?
I think so, Rob. I think the National Democratic Party has every interest in pivoting to the general election. The race in Wisconsin is widely viewed as the Democrats' second best opportunity to flip a seat from red to blue, to gain a seat from the Republicans, with Pennsylvania being the best opportunity for Democrats to gain a seat. And there are just razor-thin majorities in the United States Senate, regardless of what happens in the midterm elections. Whichever party gains the majority in the Senate is going to have a razor-thin majority. So this thing is going to be a nail-biter. The Democrats are looking for any advantage they could potentially get in this Wisconsin race. And a great way to gain an advantage potentially is to pivot to the general election, move on beyond the nomination process, put their focus on defeating Ron Johnson. So I do think National Democrats, maybe they weren't pushing necessarily Godlewski and Lazary to get out of the race, but I'm sure National Democrats don't mind that this race is essentially resolved at this point and Mandela Barnes is almost certain to be the Democratic Party's nominee.
You mentioned razor thin. That is the kind of margin we sometimes have in Wisconsin elections. You know, I mean, except for, you know, a Tammy Baldwin kind of walking away with a race in her last election. We have some pretty tight races here. I mean, these, I wouldn't bet a lot of money in any direction, would you?
Oh, no, I sure wouldn't, Rob. The thing about Ron Johnson is he is uniquely polarizing. And that almost ensures a close election. Ron Johnson inspires the most intense supporters of almost any United States senator, just as he inspires the most intense opponents of almost any United States senator. Ron Johnson, he has, you know, there's just such strong feelings in either direction surrounding Ron Johnson. That guarantees a close race. And I expect this to just go down to the wire. Ron Johnson might win by a point or two. He might lose by a point or two. But as you said, Rob, I'm not putting any money on this race. It could go either way.
Let's go to another caller now at 800-642-1234. Carolyn is with us in Menominee Falls. Carolyn, hi.
My reason for believing the primaries are important is having been gerrymandered in 2010 and experiencing the restrictions of voting just even during the primary, I'm concerned about the direction of the country. And I believe to only correct that at this time is we have to vote up and down Democrat. My own state assemblywoman will not return my call or respond to it. I think they're unresponsive because there's no moderation when we're voting. We've been restricted, gerrymandered, so we have an extreme Republican group out there.
Carolyn, thanks for the call. And Carolyn pointing toward, Anthony, something we haven't focused on so far, the race for Assembly and Senate in Wisconsin. And she mentioned, the way the partisan lines, the political lines are drawn there, it is a very, very tall order for Democrats to win a majority in either chamber.
Yeah, Rob, that might be one of the areas where there's no drama in Wisconsin politics, especially in a year like 2022, where the broader political context favors the Republican Party. There is zero chance of the Democrats winning majorities in the state assembly or the state Senate. Heck, even in a really good year for the Democrats, it's almost inconceivable that they could win majorities in either chamber of the state legislature. So it's an interesting situation that we have in Wisconsin, if you will, where our statewide elections are nail biters. Our statewide elections are just constant sources of drama, and they gain nationwide attention for just how close and competitive they are. And then on the other hand, we have a state legislature where the Republicans are firmly entrenched in the majority.
And thanks for that call, Carolyn. Anthony, that kind of raises the stakes in some ways for the governor's race. Complete Republican control, like very likely if they win the race for governor. And Democrats at least see a backstop if they can keep control of the governor's office to prevent the state legislature from doing a lot.
Absolutely. It's going to be really interesting to see if Tony Evers leans into that message in his campaign, where he basically may go to the voters and say, look, the Republicans are going to be the majority party in the state legislature. I, as governor, can block them from enacting certain laws that the people may not want. I'm a backstop. He has referred to himself as a goalie, I believe, at one point. And that might be a compelling message for voters who are looking for moderation, as the caller said, where we may not necessarily get moderation from individual legislators, but through the give and take of divided government, you might end up with something resembling moderation.
It's not so much give and take as not talking to each other at all, but, you know,
yes.
I guess it comes out the same. We're talking to Anthony Trigosky from UW La Crosse, political scientist there, looking at primary election season in Wisconsin. Want to go into your neck of the woods now, Anthony, and the congressional race in the district currently held by Ron Kind, a Democrat. He is retiring. This is, I think it's fair to say, the most potentially competitive race in Wisconsin, possible pickup, maybe likely pickup, depending on who you talk to, for Republicans. What are you seeing in that race right now?
Yeah, this is a race to watch for sure. Here in Western Wisconsin, the La Crosse, Eau Claire, Stevens Point area, Ron Kind, the longtime incumbent congressperson from this area, retiring. We have four Democrats in the field, very uncertain what the outcome of the Democratic primary here will be, in contrast to the Democratic primary for United States Senate. For sure, a highly competitive primary. So we're going to get a lot more clarity on this race out here in the 3rd Congressional District once the Democratic primary is over. But we do have clarity on the Republican side. Derek Van Orden is for sure going to be the Republican nominee. He is unopposed in the Democratic Party primary. He's gained a lot of attention for being in Washington, D.C. during the January 6th riots. He's been under fire for having using some campaign money to fund his trip to D.C. on January 6th. He brands himself as a staunch proponent of Trump and Trumpism. And so he's very much part of that wing of the party, very much an ally of Donald Trump. And national Republicans absolutely see this as a strong pickup opportunity. And Rob, that's because of the collapse of Democratic Party support in rural Wisconsin. The 3rd District out here in the West is quite rural. Ron Kind, the Democrat, had been able to hold his own in rural Wisconsin for quite a while, but it seems like those days might be over, where the Republicans out here in the West finally overcome those last holdouts, if you will, of rural areas, and really complete their dominance of rural Wisconsin through winning this district potentially in November and flipping a key House seat.
I want to hear your thoughts on messaging once we get past the primary and into the general election. Already seeing Republicans saying Mandela Barnes trying to brand him as a radical member of the radical left. Democrats saying Republicans, this is a party where the leader tried to overturn the results of the election, still is doing that. Do you think there's going to be a lot of focus on trying to make the other party look like the extreme party?
That is exactly what is going to happen as this general election campaign plays out between Mandela Barnes, presumably, and Ron Johnson. The different sides are going to paint the other side as the extreme side, if that makes sense. Ron Johnson is going to paint Mandela Barnes as a person of the far left, an ally of the far left. The Democrats are going to paint Ron Johnson as someone who is out of touch and has really gone in line with the extreme elements of the Republican Party. It's basically a mirror image, these campaign strategies that we're going to see unfold. The question, Rob, is which side will be most successful at painting the other side as the extreme one?
I won't ask you to predict any winners, but I think one prediction you can make, there's going to be a lot of money spent here in Wisconsin over the next few months.
Oh my goodness, yes. It is going to be extraordinarily expensive. Ron Johnson is a fundraising machine for himself and for his opponents. And so that is for sure going to bring in a lot of money to Wisconsin. This is going to be an unbelievably expensive Senate race. And you can bet that the same will be true of the race for governor. This is a highly competitive race for governor, regardless of who the Republican nominee is. And so in these statewide elections, we're going to see a lot of money spent. We're also going to see a lot of money spent out here in Western Wisconsin, that key 3rd congressional district that we've talked about, a very expensive race to come there. So the money is going to be pouring in here in Wisconsin, and hope we get used to those political ads, because we're going to be seeing plenty of them going forward.
Anthony, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you, Rob.
That's Anthony Chergosky, assistant professor of political science at UW La Crosse, looking at the statewide primary elections in Wisconsin. Some of the latest news, Election Day, August 9th. Coming up Monday here on Central Time, a new state Supreme Court ruling could have a big impact on voting for people with disabilities. A disability rights organization tells us what it means for Wisconsin voters. That's Monday here on Central Time.